In this episode of Tim Talk, Tim will explore the topic of domestic violence with two women working to bring positive change through dialogue and action.
Thank you for joining us on this very important Tim Talk. I'm Tim Dentry, President and CEO of Northern Light Health. As you may know, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I felt it was important to use our podcast to bring awareness in an up-close and personal way. To help me do that, I am here with two wonderful people. Christine Mattson is Supervisor in Environmental Services at Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. As a child, Christine grew up in a home with domestic violence and will share her experience and thoughts. Thank you for joining us, Christine.
Thank you, Tim.
Our second guest is Amanda Cost, Executive Director of Partners for Peace, a domestic violence prevention organization based in Bangor. Welcome back, Amanda. As our listeners may recall, you joined us last year as well on this very topic.
Thank you so much for having me back, Tim.
My pleasure, and I'm thankful to both of you for being here with us today. Really, really appreciate that. To begin our discussion today, may I ask you first, Christine, about your life experience?
Absolutely. I grew up as a child, mostly with my mom, because prior to that, my real father was abusive to her. There were several times that I remember waking up from naps and he would be beating her. When I was growing up, it wasn't out of the ordinary for my mother to have a black eye or bruises in family photos. My sister, her first time ever having a memory, because she's so much younger than me, was actually a memory of my mother getting choked and raped. And that was like when her mind finally like became aware and alive. So when she looks back, that's her first memory. Because of that, she experiences a lot of emotional anxieties and stuff like that in relationships. We, as a family, have grown. We're an amazing family. I'm not going to knock that. But we do have our struggles because of what happened in the past. My father never really served any time, because back in the 80s, domestic violence wasn't a criminal offense. You could beat your wife. It was acceptable. So it took my mother a lot of courage to come from that situation and run away with my sister and I. I spent the majority of two of my preteen years in hideaway homes with the Women's Crisis Service out of New Hampshire. We bounced from these homes all the time with other battered women. We constantly had to move because my father would find out where the home was, or another woman's husband would find out where the home was. So we would disband and, like, in the middle of the night, just go places and leave everything that we had behind. So I didn't have a lot of schooling during that time period that wasn't by the Women's Crisis Service volunteers, that would just try to have books and stuff on hand. It was kind of a very different lesson of life. We kind of were raised that this could be the reality, so you have to protect yourself at all costs.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think that's exactly the personal context and message that we are hoping our listeners would hear. And it's not an easy thing for people to share, and your strength and courage and who you are shined through. So thank you for sharing that. And you know, I was just thinking also, you know, the use the words struggles. So the struggles, and we are an amazing family, like present state. So you were acknowledging the struggles, and in the very same sentence you said, and we are an amazing family. I just think that's amazing. That's awesome. Thank you for that. Amanda, how does Christine's story resonate with what you see in the lives dealing with domestic violence every day?
Well, I too have to thank Christine for sharing her story. It's just so important that people hear the truths of survivors so that we can learn from what people have been through, and also so those folks who are out there dealing with it right now know that they're not alone and know that there are people around who care, and also understand that you can get past it. You can become an incredible family, and that we know children are resilient. And oftentimes the people around them are the ones that help them see that resiliency to becoming a human who can share their story later on in an effort to help others. So thank you so much for that. And your story really does parallel what we see a lot in our work with survivors of domestic violence on our helpline or in the courts, children who are witnessing abuse, families who have to bounce around from shelter to shelter or family members' homes. It's very common that that happens. I think one of the things you said that's really resonated with me was the fact that your sister saw something, and that's when she recognized what was going on. Many of us think that if children aren't present in the room, that they don't know what's going on. And I couldn't tell, it's so not the case. They know what's going on. They feel it. They sense it. And as an organization, one of the things that we do is work really closely with the supportive non-offending parent to help them continue to be a support for their children so that they can be a resilient family to be able to move through this abuse experience. So it's so important to hear stories from individuals like you to show the strength and the courage and the resiliency to others who need help.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you for all the work that you do.
And, you know, staying on that topic, Amanda, as it relates to Partners for Peace. So I love how you just shared your own personal reflections on with what Christine shared with us. Now, maybe put it in a broader context of the kind of work that Partners for Peace does.
Sure. So Partners for Peace is the domestic violence resource center that provides support to people in Penobscot and Piscataquis counties. And we are one of many organizations that exist across the state that do similar work. And our work has a two-pronged approach to it. One is we're really invested in providing information and support and resources to people who are experiencing abuse firsthand. We also are very invested in making sure that family members, friends, community partners, service providers also know that we're available to them if they have somebody in their life, someone they care about or someone they're providing services to who they might need additional information about how to be helpful to them. We can help those third-party individuals as well. We do that through Helpline. We do that through groups. We have a temporary emergency shelter, a number of other housing programs. We call ourselves a resource center because we're not focused on just helping the person in one way. We're really trying to figure out how what they need and how we can help meet that need no matter what it is. So that's one side of the work that we do. And then the other side of the work is about working in our community to come up with prevention strategies. As you just said, Tim, we are in the business of working ourselves out of a job. We want to work with children to make sure they understand what relationships that are equitable and healthy look like. We want to make sure that employers in our area understand that they have a responsibility to help keep their employees safe and to recognize when controlling and abusive behaviors might be happening on work time. There are so many different sectors in our community that are impacted by domestic violence, and we see it as our job to help those sectors recognize that and then come up with strategies for dealing with it. So we do that prevention work through this community awareness raising work, and we do prevention in the work that we do every day with survivors, because we feel like if you're reaching out and calling us and getting help, that level of intervention might ultimately lead to prevention, and that is what we're hoping.
Thank you. That's a really terrific connection between personal stories and what Partners for Peace does. And it makes me think, Amanda, staying with you for one question. One of the initiatives that we are really trying to prioritize here, really trying to make sure our staff know that we have their backs, and that is really a zero tolerance policy. Those are big words, but on workplace violence, and in healthcare, you know, it's really a troubling, infuriating for me as a leader of the organization that workplace violence is So it's increasing, and it's so rampant, and it's serious. And here we're trying to have caregivers feeling really good about what they do, and everybody is a caregiver in Northern Light Health. Mm-hmm. And for them to be in situations where there's violence, that they're on the receiving end of violence and other forms of verbal, et cetera, of abuse from the patients and families that we're just trying to serve, my being infuriated gets in the way. So we need people like you to help us think of a good constructive way we can go about making sure that doesn't happen. So a long way to ask really the question, but in domestic violence situations you're involved with, is it common to see spillover into workplace violence? And if so, do you have any advice for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have really mixed feelings about this one. One being because I'm enraged that you all have to deal with this, and I'm grateful that you all are taking this up because it is really critical to the safety and well-being of our communities and your workers. We know that domestic violence definitely spills over in workplaces, and I think it's common for people to assume that it's going to come from the outside to within. And I would encourage you all to think about it a little bit differently, because many of the people who are employees of Northern Light are experiencing domestic abuse in one way, shape, or form, or they have somebody that's close to them who is. And so that can show up in the workplace in a variety of different ways: lost time at work, coming to work with injuries, someone feeling like they can't fully engage in work because of the experiences of what's going on at home. There's so many things to look out for. And when it comes to advice about how to deal with it, the first thing I would say is don't ignore it. The second thing I would say is come up with a strategy that works for departments, because how different departments deal with it, well, departments will need to deal with it differently based on, you know, exposure and all of the things that make that department a department. So individualize the plans that need to be made. And then I would also say reach out for help and support, whether it's internally or externally to an organization like ours. It's hard to deal with violence and abuse. It's even more challenging when you're dealing with it close to home or close to work. And so you can become very isolated and insular, and you're thinking about how to deal with it. And it's really important to get some outside perspective so that you don't feel alone, and so that you can really focus on how to help yourself, and others can help you see the perspective of how to help like a collective group or a collective department. So those would be some tips that I would have for you. There's a lot more that goes into it. It's not really a simple answer. Don't minimize it would be the other thing I would say. And give yourself some grace and patience as you work through it. Meaningful progress is really important. You won't get it right the first time, but if you continue to work through it, you will make meaningful progress in the lives of people who will really feel grateful for that.
Thank you. And several things really struck me. Don't ignore it. Absolutely. Don't feel alone. And having a strategy that works, and pointing out that many of my colleagues, our colleagues, Christine and my colleagues in Northern Light are experiencing domestic violence, and it just made me think, and we don't see that. So to make sure we you know, don't ignore it and understand that. But it made me think, Christine, that, you know, you had stated that for you, for example, schooling at that period of your life was a challenge. You stated that, you know, your sister feels anxiety in certain moments in relationships and that kind of a thing, which, connecting what I heard from both of you, that's so important. I hope our listeners really reflect on this, that a lot can be going on in people's lives that impact so many things. And so don't jump to a conclusion or put people in a box of a definition of who they are or what they are or what they're dealing with, you know, without having a little humility and open mind. So that's really leading me to a question, so we can hear a little bit more on your experience that we had shared with previously, Christine. I know that you grew up in a home where your mother, you mentioned her already today, mm-hmm. was helping make some changes to not only deal with your own family situation, but the domestic violence laws in your home state of New Hampshire. Talk to us about your mom and what were those changes and how did that, more importantly, affect you and your sister?
Sure. So when she first entered, she was a victim, and my mother tried as hard as she could to swap from being a victim to being a role model. She immediately, you know, absorbed all the counselings that went on and said, all right, I'm going to stop this. She became a counselor herself to other women that were in the need for intervention or to just help, even if it meant opening our doors later on for a young family to move in with us for a month, 2 months, 3 months. It happened all the time. We became a safe house in the middle of nowhere. It was kind of fun. It was like our family would grow instantly. But then she also, because it was the early 80s, there were no laws. So the laws were all for a man, regardless of if the man was the abuser. So in cases where the woman's the abuser, because it can go either way, the man would have the rights. Every single time, he would have the right to see the children. As long as they were married, he could go to my mom's workplace, pull her out of work. He had all the rights. So she helped with the work of Jean Shaheen in New Hampshire. What they created were safe meeting spaces. So they would meet in like police department parking lots and then swap the children off there. That was something that was totally brand new. They made each parent accountable for the children. So if they're paying child support, they also had to see the child because oftentimes it would be total abandonment. They made mandatory child advocates. So someone was there thinking about the welfare of the child the entire time. That wasn't a thing. And they created, and I think it's kind of obsolete now, but like deadbeat dad posters. Because people in town, if they were looking for, you know, the fathers that weren't paying, and it was the way to do something back in the 80s, I think it's obsolete at this point. However, she and Jean Shaheen would sit there and mull over the pros and cons of each one of these things for hours at the table. It was kind of eye-opening because at the time I was only maybe 10, so I didn't even understand half of it sometimes. But they would say, well, if we meet the police department, you know, even if he does act up, the police are inside, like they're not going to see in the parking lot. It wasn't as much video footage and stuff like that back then, so they created like inside spaces. So if you felt safer to be inside and then have the police escort you, which we did quite often, escort my mom home. And then they did that. So there were those type of changes that were slowly introduced throughout the time.
One thing that is not obsolete is the mulling over around a table for hours and hours and hours about the benefits and the cons of any of the actions that we take in our work, because we know that what we're doing is impacting people's lives, and we want to make sure we address that with as much thought as possible. So it absolutely made me chuckle when you said that, because that is still the true way that we approach our work today, because we're dealing with humans. It's so important.
Yeah, because they would suggest different scenarios, and I didn't even think about it at the time. And here are these two adults, but what if this happens? And that's what they did.
That is terrific. What a great example. I mean, you had a leader and a mentor and someone you could talk about learning. That's learning mm-hmm. at the table like that. That's wonderful. And thank you, Amanda, also for sharing your perspective on that. So Amanda, before, you know, we begin to wrap up, if our listeners would like to help or to take action to end domestic violence or anything else, want to get engaged, what can they do?
Well, first of all, I want to take it back to something you said earlier, which is October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. If you're someone who's interested in learning more about the issue of domestic violence or what our organization does or how you can be helpful, You can go visit our website, partnersforpeaceme.org. You can visit any of our social media sites. You can learn a lot more about what we're doing throughout the month and get engaged in activities like that. We will be holding a volunteer orientation if you're interested in volunteering for our organization. Our helpline is staffed by volunteers on a pretty regular basis, and so that's one way that you could give back if that's something you're interested in doing. If you're trying to figure out how to help because abuse is something that's present in the life of somebody that you care about or you're working with, consider reaching out to our helpline. We could talk to you about the strategies in being helpful to them and also support you through it, because it can be really hard to watch someone you care about go through this. And similar to what I said earlier about what the hospital system can do with regards to dealing with workplace violence, if you think there's somebody in your life who's going through this, don't ignore it. Try to find ways, subtle and maybe not so subtle ways, to be helpful to them. Let them know that you believe them, that you're there no matter what the choices are that they make, even if you don't agree with them, that you're there for them. There are a lot of those strategies that are really about being humane, making a human connection, helping somebody to feel like they belong, that can really go a long way in helping someone who's experiencing abuse and violence to get through what it is that they're getting through. Don't make assumptions. Don't put them in a box. All the things that you were saying earlier. And remember that domestic violence is something that can happen to anybody. It certainly happens disproportionately in marginalized communities, and that is an issue that we across our nation need to address pretty holistically, and at our organization is something that we're working on. Also keep in mind that this will never stop in our world if we don't start looking at the folks who are perpetrating the crimes of domestic violence. So think about that too. Have you ever seen somebody be abusive or know somebody who was? And did you ever consider talking to them about stopping that behavior versus automatically jumping to the victim's aid to ask them to change what they're doing?
Thank you so much. That is so many resources that that you touched on, that you offer, and Partners for Peace, and ways that people can connect. So, Amanda, thank you for all that you have done and are doing to address domestic violence. And thank you, my friend and colleague, Christine, for your courage, in sharing your very personal story with our audience. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was my honor and privilege to have you both on our show. And so thank you, our podcast listeners, too. I encourage you to listen to this twice. There's a lot that we could learn from. Until next time, I'm Tim Dentry, encouraging you to listen and act to promote our Northern Light Health culture of caring, diversity, and inclusion that starts with caring for one another. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Tim Talk. If you enjoyed this podcast, please join us next month when we will discuss the prevalence of mental health stigma in our society and the importance of destigmatizing mental illness.